Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. He doesn't always play nice. And that's what gets you the information you need. This is The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I usually have pretty thick skin over this stuff, but it would have been nice to see him play his entire career with the New Jersey Devils. And so I kind of have a little sorrowness in that. I mean, it should have been a fairy tale ending where Marty Brodeur rides off in the sunset of the Devils. I'm a little confused why, if I'm going to be brutally honest, why the press conference and why the retirement part isn't in New Jersey. I know it's in St. Louis, and he's only been there a couple of months, and I understand maybe even after the press conference he went back there and worked a little bit because he's under contract or whatever it may be. You know, everybody has to do what's right. But that part of it. But other than that, look, this is a day where it should be celebrate the illustrious career of Marty Brodeur. Having said all that.
That was Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils color analyst, in conversation with yours truly, Jeff Blair, yesterday, talking about Martin Brodeur's retirement. And I think sort of summing up what a lot of us are feeling today as we get ready to watch Marty Brodeur's retirement and listen to it. It'll be live on Sportsnet and also on Sportsnet 590 The Fan around 11:17, I believe, 11:17, 11:20. We will start a special extended edition of Hockey Central at noon right here as we get you set for that news conference. Talked to Ken Danico yesterday. Great athletes should have the right to decide when they want to leave the game. It's much more preferable to have the athlete make the decision as opposed to a team, or as opposed to have a decision forced upon him by an injury or economics or some reason like that. And I'm glad Marty Brodeur got the call his shot here. But man, I'd feel a lot better if this news conference was being held in New Jersey and he was retiring as a New Jersey Devil and they'd signed him to a one-day contract and he'd gone back and retired. As it is right now, it's going to be hard to look at Marty Brodeur's biography and see those 7 games with the St. Louis Blues. Ren Lavoie of TVS Sports is one of our regular insiders. He knows Martin Brodeur and the Brodeur family very well. He is in St. Louis for the news conference. Ren Lavoie joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Reno, I think like you, I'm glad that Martin got to make the decision. He came back. He put a lot of things to rest. He got closure. But it doesn't seem right seeing Marty Brodeur's news conference in St. Louis, does it?
It's strange. It's obviously a little strange. I think, and I talk about it this morning at TVA Sports. If he had to retire with the St. Louis Blues, there's no problem with that. But the press conference should be, I think, in New Jersey. Like, let's say, and you remember Jeff, 2-3 years ago, before Derek Jeter signed his last contract with the Yankees, there was some rumors that he can play elsewhere. The bottom line is, even if he played, let's say, 1 or 2 years with the Texas Rangers, at the end of the day, the press conference for his retirement, I don't think will be in Texas. That press conference, I'm convinced, will happen in New York, in the Yankee facility. Now, it's not what we have today. And it seems to me, and I feel like, even if Lula Moriello was, they call him, the Blues call him to let him know what's going to happen, you feel that there's something that's not going well between the Devils and Martin Brodeur. Is it that bad? I don't think so. But at the end of the day, I feel that Martin is looking at his situation right now, and he's saying to himself, you know what, I feel like the St. Louis Blues are taking care of me the right way, and for them, I'm going to do my press conference today, retiring as a St. Louis Blues, I'll work with them until the end of the season. They made a commitment for me. I didn't have a commitment from another team this season except from the St. Louis Blues. So that's why I'm going to retire in St. Louis.
Man, it seems like he's really letting his pride get in the way of things, though, doesn't it? From a distance?
Well, you know what? In a way, Jeff, you need to put yourself in Martin's brother's shoes. And those athletes are proud, and you know it. The fact that last year he finished his season and career with the Devils, was it on the right foot? I'm not convinced. Look at what happened with the – and I'm just going to go back to the Yankees and Derek Jeter, if you don't mind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When Derek Jeter, in his last season as a Yankee, there was no other shortstop behind him trying to have his job.
Right.
He was doing his job. When he wasn't there, somebody else was filling in, but it was his store. It was the Derek Jeter store. It didn't happen in New Jersey. It didn't happen because there was another goaltender behind Martin who was actually a good goaltender, who's still there today, Corey Schneider. But, you know, I understand why Lou Lamoriello decided to make that move. If he had the chance to pick Corey Schneider, knowing that Martin will last only one more season in his organization, he had to do it. But the bottom line is, for Martin Brodeur himself, he was pushed aside. He wasn't able to do his home tour. And he was not the one who was in front of the Devil's Nets every night. He had to share it. And I feel like after what everything Martin did, not only on the ice, but off the ice, financially for the Devils, at the end of the day, the last year should be his last year. And I just want to say something here.
Mm-hmm.
This is not Martin who's saying that to me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my understanding of all the situation, if you're looking at it since a year ago.
Ren Lavoie joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Now, Lou Lamoriello did say yesterday or a couple of days ago that Martin Brodeur would be back with the organization at some time in some capacity. Do you believe that?
No.
Okay.
Not right now.
Okay,
not
let me
right
ask
now.
You this. What if down the road Lou Lamoriello isn't there and there's another, you know, president of hockey ops or whatever?
It's more about what's Lou's going to offer.
Mm-hmm.
This is more, it's not against Lou. It's not about Lou. It's about, okay, I'm Martin Brodeur. I want to work in the NHL. I'm ready to work for any team as a consultant, assistant GM, whatever you want to name it. I'm ready. I want to learn the business. And one day I want to be a GM. If Lou Lamoriello is saying, come work for me, but you'll have no role in my organization, you won't have a say in anything that happened around this team, okay, so I'm more a mascot than
mm-hmm.
an employee. And if the Blues are saying, hey, come here, buddy, you played for us, you know the players, you know what's going on in this dressing room, you're going to work hard with us until the end of the season, we need your help, we need your input, we need to know what's going on around the league. You know the league perfectly. You know what's going on the ice. If we want to make a trade, you know about the other player on the other side. So we need you around here right now. So that's why the Blues asked Marty to stay in St. Louis. And I'm not convinced he had the same offers with the Devils.
What do you think Marty will be doing for St. Louis? And do you think that ultimately he would be the type of person that would want to get into coaching? Or do you see him maybe, you know, much like Patrick Waugh, or do you see him more of a, you know, a management guy, a front office guy?
I see him more as a front office guy.
Mm-hmm.
Because he always, you know, he was always interested by that position. In all the conversation that I had with him, he never said to me, Renaud, I want to be a head coach in the NHL. No, no, no. It was more about being, you know, in the management group. So that's what I see. But nobody's going to give Martin Brodeur the title of a GM right now. Mm-hmm. You need to learn the business. It looks easy, but it's not easy at all. So it's not only knowing what type of trade we can do. Are we going to trade for a good player or not? It's not only scouting. There's more of things to learn. And that's why, you know what, I see him finishing the season with the Blues, learning what's going on, what could be a good GM / assistant GM one day, see what's going to happen for him, and finish the season, and maybe he's going to stay with the St. Louis Blues for a few years. We don't know yet, but it's a nice place to learn because, I mean, the management here is really strong. It's not a one-man show. They have a lot to teach. And you know what? I'm convinced that for Martin that this is the best scenario right now. And I won't be surprised that he'll stay with the Blues for another year or two after that.
Ren, what do you know about Marty? You know, not giving away secrets here, but what do you know about Marty, or what is the thing you think about Marty that maybe fans, those of us, other members of the media, don't realize about him? Is there something about him that we've missed whenever we talk about him? You know, we talk about how he hit his style of goaltending, and obviously the numbers speak for themselves. But is there something else about Marty that maybe we just didn't give him enough credit for?
I think what people need to know is it was easy for him. Mm-hmm. It was an easy game for him. And we've talked about that, Jeff, before. But I always said that he's a street hockey goaltender because, you know what, the game is slow. And in front of him, everything was slow. It was like being Wayne Gretzky on the ice. The game was slow for Wayne Gretzky. In a way, he was like Mario Lemieux because he wasn't training a lot during the summer. Actually, he was training harder at the end of his career than when he started. I remember all those stories about Mario Lemieux putting his skate for the first time 2 days before the start of the training camp. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that was exactly the same with Marty, but it was close. He didn't have to. He didn't have to put a lot of hours in a gym because at the end of the day, he knew he'll play around 65, 70 games per season. He knew that the system in front of him will be good for him, not challenging physically, mm-hmm. but at the same time he had to stop those pucks. So for me, the game was easy for him, and that's just crazy to say because he played versus all the best players in the league for the last 20 years.
Right.
So he faced Mario Lemieux, he faced Wayne Gretzky, all those young Russians that were coming in. He all saw those players. And it's amazing to see what he did, and I just hope that people are gonna say, like, that you're not gonna see another Martin Brodeur in your life. Mm-hmm. I hope people enjoyed it because it's not gonna happen. It's impossible to see a goaltender in those days to 70 times in front of a net. The league is not allowing that right now because it's too challenging.
Renaud, I know you've got a news conference to get ready for. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Great insight in Marty Brodeur, as always, my friend.
Have a nice one, Jeff. Have a nice weekend.
Take care. That is Renaud Lavoie, Tavia Sports. And you want to replay that interview if you want to find out about Marty Brodeur. That is a great description about how the game was slow for Marty. And it's interesting because Renaud brought up a comparison to Derek Jeter and Derek Jeter's retirement tour. And the other thing, and I thought of this when Renaud was describing that, I've always remembered a conversation that a group of us had with Derek Jeter during his last World Series appearance. And it was on an off day. And somebody asked Jeter, what did he see when he was on the field? You know, when he was standing out there at Yankee Stadium, what did he see? What did his eyes register? Did he see the crowd? Did he see the catcher's signal? What did he look at? What did he see? And he made the point about how it was like being on stage and all he saw were the lights. And he said, I couldn't see anything other than the lights. watched the ball. I was aware of my situation, watched what the catcher was calling, all that stuff. But he said it was like being out in a stage. And then he said something that was really interesting. He said, and as I got older, as I'm getting older, he said, it's a lot more difficult to look at it that way. When I was younger, everything was slower. It was like you were on a stage, but it was a slow developing play. And he said, now that I'm older, stuff seems to happen a lot faster. Stuff seems to come at me a lot faster. And you would think that because of experience, the game would actually slow down more. But for Derek Jeter, the game actually got faster the older he got. And it was kind of an interesting tie-in to what Ren Lavoie said about Marty Brodeur. Again, we will have Martin Brodeur's news conference from St. Louis at 11:17, around 11:17 today. It'll be a special extended edition of Hockey Central at noon. And you can catch the news conference live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Sportsnet. And Ren Lavoie is absolutely right. Take a look at the players who've come through the league during Martin Brodeur's tenure, all the great ones, including the great one. He's faced all of them. Greg Wyshynski, or as we affectionately refer to him, Mr. Puck Daddy from Yahoo Sports. He is the editor of the Puck Daddy blog in Yahoo Sports. And, of course, you know him as well as a co-host of the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. Got a great item yesterday. Got my attention on Twitter. Last night was a night, and maybe it was because the Leafs-Devils game was so abysmal that I was following Twitter. I didn't troll people. I was pretty good. I'm still debating, by the way. And Greg, I want your take on this. Who should I troll on Sunday? Seahawks fans or Patriots fans? Because I got to troll one of them.
Oh boy, that's a tough call. I mean, Patriots fans have been trolled pretty heavy this past week with the Deflategate stuff.
Seems like shooting fish in a barrel. It's almost got to be Seahawks. And Seahawks fans, they're like Canucks fans. They've got no sense of humor.
Well, they are Canucks fans.
Yeah, that's true.
Face it. I mean, most of their fans do live in that glorious suburb of Seattle we call Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is an aspect to that. Yeah, I would say probably Seahawks fans overall, but I would take it quarter to quarter. I mean, most people do when they have their Super Bowl pool in front of them.
Okay, I'll bear that in mind because I mean, it's the only thing that's going to keep me interested in the Super Bowl is trolling fans. It's just that the Seahawks are so easy to do or I should say the Patriots are so easy to do, and I think the Seahawks might have to raise my trolling game a little bit with that. But anyhow, I wasn't trolling last night. Lo and behold, on Twitter, there you are telling me that the nerds have won and the puckheads have lost, that they've retreated inside the castle. They've retreated inside the castle. They've pulled up the gates, and basically they're going to starve themselves to death. Advanced stats are coming to NHL.com.
That's right. NHL.com starting next month will incorporate Corsi, Fenwick, PDO, zone starts, shot length or distance rather, and a number of other metrics into their official stats pages. There'll be a tab for advanced stats. You'll be able to search back to, I think, 2010, 2011 is when they'll have tabulated them from. But all that stuff, that cottage industry of fan created stats and calculated stats, all that stuff that we've been following for the last couple of years on sites and then seeing those site editors get hired by NHL teams, the NHL is making that official. It's like they've taken fan fiction and made it canon. You know what I mean? So a major quibble from the advanced stats community is now out the window as the NHL officially endorses this crazy nerd voodoo.
Greg Wyshynski joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see where this goes because baseball did this a long time ago, of course. Baseball's fought this. Well, we've talked about this. Baseball's fought this battle years and years and years ago. But in baseball arbitration hearings, advanced stats are still, they're not the currency of the realm. It's still the old standbys, RBIs and things of that nature. But I'm wondering if you think in hockey, because if you take a look at the history of sports and advanced stats, this has happened really quickly in hockey. That it's gone from being, I mean, God, I can think, what, I mean, a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, guys who were doing this were looked at as just being absolute lunatics. It took baseball probably 5 or 6 years to sort of wrap its arms around this. Hockey's done it in a couple of years. Where does this go, do you think? Does it eventually go to the point where perhaps advanced stats are used in things like arbitration hearings?
It's possible. And the reason it's possible is because as the NHL moves forward with this new technology that they have, this puck tracking tech or player tracking technology, I should say, and keep in mind that
the advanced stats that are going to hit the site next month are not ones generated by player tracking. They're going to be generated by the usual box scores, the observational stuff from games. This is not related to that, but they could combine at some point, as the player tracking stuff gets better. But as the NHL implements more of this, that the numbers are going to be more precise. We're going to know to the second how long a guy possesses the puck on a shift, for example. And once we get there, once we get hard data from player tracking, I think then we're going to see it more widely accepted and maybe used in arbitration hearings. And the interesting thing about arbitration when it comes to things like possession is obviously some teams are better at it than others.
Mm-hmm.
And some players are better at it than others. I mean, you know, depending on what kind of system you play, there's a big difference between what the Leafs do and what the LA Kings do. I mean, let's be honest here.
Right.
So depending on what kind of system you play, it could affect your numbers. And then you get into this really weird area, which is, what do you value? Because if I'm a guy who scores 40 goals, my Corsi stinks. Do you value that? Or do you look at a guy like Benoit Pouliot, who basically gets a contract from the Oilers because he's seen as a great possession player on the third or fourth line of the Rangers. So it's a real interesting wrinkle in arbitration hearings, but I don't think we're quite there yet with the accuracy of the stats to where I think it'll be as valid as the other numbers that they deal with.
And it's going to come down, like anything else, it's going to come down to how teams are going to make value judgments in this. I remember back way before advanced stats in baseball, the big argument in arbitration hearings was, what's the approximate value of a stolen base? And the Montreal Expos used to screw Marquise Grissom all the time because Bill Stoneman just looked at him and said, I don't think a stolen base is worth jack. So finally, one year, Marquise Grissom said, all right, and his stolen bases fell by 40 to prove a point. So when we have seen stuff like this happen before where things kind of develop, and as I always tell people, the good stats always come to the surface. The bad stats are eventually revealed, and they just stop being used. It's the way it is.
Yeah, for sure. And the other aspect of this that can't be denied is the idea that, when we talked about it off the top that the Nerds won, I mean, they did, and they won in a sense. Not only were the numbers they were dealing with and the analysis that a lot of these bloggers have been doing shown to be, a progressive, interesting way to address, the effectiveness of players and teams. But it also showed there's a market for it.
Mm-hmm.
And the minute the NHL sees there's a market for it, they're going to hop on things. There was a time way back, like 7 or 8 years ago, you couldn't find a fight on NHL.com. They didn't publish them. And then all the blogs started to get clips off of YouTube, and they would have fights on their sites within, 10 minutes of the fight ending. And everybody would go to their sites and click on things and get traffic. And then the NHL is like, well, wait a second here. Why are we letting them have that?
Mm-hmm.
And now you see things where these big advanced stats sites are thriving, and there's new ones seemingly every day. And the NHL is like, well, all they're doing is using our numbers. All they're doing is scraping from our box scores. So we'll just do our own thing. And I don't know. I've not gotten any official word from the league whether this is all going to eventually lead to some level of a subscription service
mm-hmm.
for certain aspects of NHL.com. But it wouldn't shock me. Would it shock you to see
absolutely
them buy
not.
All that player tracking stuff and all this advanced stats stuff and then put it together in sort of a game center live for hockey nerds? It would not shock me at all to see that.
No, the only other thing I can see is maybe Elias. I mean, I guess Elias has a paid service, so I don't know if that would be a possibility. But no, if I'm the NHL and I'm looking to monetize this, I mean, everybody's trying to monetize the internet, right? That's the pursuit of this century, is trying to figure out how to make a lot of money off the internet. And if I can do that, why not? Because I've got to tell you, I mean, I'm not a hardcore hockey fan. I follow hockey because I do this and I write about it. But I don't understand all the advanced stats in hockey, but I'm trying to, and I'm looking at them, and I'm reading about them, and I'm trying to figure out which ones make the most sense for me. And I bet a lot of people are doing that. I bet a lot of just sort of, not accidental fans, but casual fans are doing that, because I find it interesting.
I think the pushback on it comes from two places. One, it comes from a place of skepticism because it's something new. It wasn't official. You couldn't find it on NHL.com. And it was sort of confusing, and no one really knew how effective some of these stats were in telling us about the game. They weren't all that predictive sometimes. They're more, more about evaluation after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a pushback on that. The other pushback was a lot of the old guard media that would constantly push back on these stats and criticize nerds and say, go back to the basement and, you know, where's your pocket protector and all this other stuff. It was more about the idea that these aggressive, proselytizing statisticians were the ones pushing this thing on people that just didn't necessarily buy the religion. Mm-hmm. And they found the entire back and forth with them repugnant because you had one side saying, well, this new stat says that, and the other side saying, well, my eyes tell me this, and never the twain shall meet. So I think the NHL embracing this stuff and putting it on .com is going to maybe go a long way towards bridging that gap between the two sides of the argument. But, there's still a degree of skepticism about Corsi and Fenwick in the sense that the NHL even itself has told me they are hoping that the player tracking stuff can bring this thing to a level of accuracy, because at the end of the day, those two metrics are still sort of projections of what they believe puck possession should be. And the NHL is hoping to eventually, you know, get hard numbers on it from their software.
And I'll tell you the other thing too, because it is a league with a salary cap, and because it is a league where the salary cap's going down. There's teams are going to want to make better use of scarce resources. And if player tracking can eliminate a lot of the, you know, sort of the disconnect between the eyes and the brain that scouts in every sport sometimes have, if player tracking can eliminate that, it could be a real boon for sure. A league where there's a salary cap.
Yep, absolutely. And you know, the fact that it'll be centralized with the NHL, I think, helps. The teams around the league all say that they've had some level of possession tracking for several years. They may just say that to sound smart now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them say that they've been, you know, dabbling in this stuff for quite a while. And obviously you had some really high-profile hirings in Toronto and in New Jersey and Edmonton as well. So it's there. I mean, it's something the league has definitely sort of adopted from a team-by-team basis. And now we'll have it on the official site. So, you know, and it's one-stop shopping now, Judge. You can go to NHL.com, find out your guy's plus-minus, a frivolous, stupid stat, and then go find out how well he possesses the puck in a one-goal game, which is a really important stat.
Good stuff as always, Greg. Fascinating conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Greg Wyshynski is editor of the Puck Daddy blog on Yahoo Sports, co-host of the Merrick versus Wyshynski podcast. So there you go. You'll be able to get your fix of Fenwick. You'll be able to get your quantity of Corsi. You'll be able to get your percentage of pod, something like that, whatever it is, on NHL.com in February. Advanced stats coming to NHL.com. The stats guys have won. Old school hockey guys, you have lost. Back to the castle. Pull up the gates. You're going to starve yourself to death. No more banging your head against the wall. It's over. Wave the white flag. The stats guys have won. Mark Edelman's a law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, City of University of New York. He's also a sports law writer, or the sports law writer for Forbes magazine. We're going to talk to Mark Edelman about this story that kind of bubbled to the surface in New York. It was always there, but it's become more and more, as we get closer to spring training, it's become more and more of a story. Alex Rodriguez has $5.6 million home run milestone bonuses in his contract. He hits a 660th home run, which would tie Willie Mays for fourth all time. He gets $6 million for that. He's six away from that at 654. If he ties Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and Barry Bonds and passing Bonds, he gets an additional $6 million bonus for each move that he makes. Not surprisingly, there's an indication that the Yankees are going to go to court to void the milestone bonuses in his contract, clearly hooking up Alex Rodriguez to the Biogenesis thing and essentially arguing, I would presume, that basically it's a, you know, that the record is tainted and that there isn't as much value in it as there used to be. Think about this. This could be going on while the New York Yankees are going to be relying on Alex Rodriguez to try to get themselves back into the playoffs. It's got a chance to be real messy. Mark Edelman, law professor of the Zicklin School of Business, City University of New York, will be along. We'll talk about the next installment. And as your A-Rod turns, when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Well, I think Barry Bonds, he has 762.
But he has an asterisk next to his name.
Does he? Not yet.
Well, in the minds of many, he does.
That was Katie Couric in conversation with Alex Rodriguez discussing who he thinks has the actual home run record, Barry Bonds or Hank Aaron. This is of interest because with all the stuff going on in the last year or so surrounding Alex Rodriguez and Biogenesis and steroids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the fact that the Yankees had signed him to a contract that included $5, $6 million home run milestone bonuses often didn't get mentioned. Now, you got to think back to when this deal was done. The Yankees, and I'm sure Steiner Sports Collectibles had part of this. The Yankees were looking at Alex Rodriguez and saying, this is the guy who will take a run at the home run record. How do we monetize it? How do we market this? And the idea that they came up with along with A-Rod's, A-Rod's agents was this set of a $6 million bonus payment for each milestone achieved. So, for example, A-Rod is currently 6 home runs away from tying Willie Mays for the 4th all-time record at 660. A-Rod hits those 6 home runs, he makes $6 million. The other bonuses, and that's in addition to his salary, of course, the other bonuses are for tying Babe Ruth at 714, tying Hank Aaron at 755, tying Barry Bonds 762, and passing Bonds 763. So you're looking at $30 million here. And as part of the Yankees, I don't even know if you would call it attempt to get out from under Alex Rodriguez's contract, the focus now seems to have fallen on these bonus clauses. And I would presume the Yankees are saying, look, these clauses don't mean what they used to mean because of Alex Rodriguez's connection to Biogenesis, his connection to steroids, and performance-enhancing drugs. And a skeptic may even say, because the home run record itself doesn't mean what it used to mean. Bottom line is, whatever your case is morally, whatever your stance is morally, the fact of the matter is Alex Rodriguez has a contract that gives him $5, $6 million payments for home run milestone bonuses. Mark Edelman is a law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, City University of New York. He also writes in sports law for Forbes magazine. You can follow Mark Edelman on Twitter, at Mark Edelman. This is his Twitter handle, Mark Edelman. Joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mark, I admit when this contract came out, everybody looked about this, everybody talked about it, everybody looked ahead. But I think with all the stuff that was going on with A-Rod in the past couple of years, it kind of got shoved to the side. Now you've got A-Rod showing up at spring training and basically telling everybody, I want to be the everyday third baseman, I want to be the big guy in this team, et cetera, et cetera. And you could end up having the Yankees in court with them. From a legal point of view, walk me through the two arguments here that may be made, Alex's side and the Yankee side.
Well, Alex Rodriguez's first argument is going to be that the Yankees signed this contract with him. The Yankees are a billion-dollar property that have a wide range of attorneys that represent them. And if an attorney did not like the clause that was proposed by Alex Rodriguez's team, they should have struck it, changed it, or altered it. They had the opportunity to put language in the clause that said that if Alex Rodriguez engaged in any wrongdoing, that the bonuses would be void, or that the home run record could not be tarnished, or anything about performance-enhancing substances, and the Yankees chose not to do it. The language simply says that if Alex Rodriguez hits a certain number of home runs, he gets the money. And Alex would argue that he's done that, and he's on his way to doing that, and he would have already been otherwise punished with his year suspension for his wrongdoing. Now, from the Yankees' perspective, I think it gets more interesting.
back in 1919, when Charles Comiskey was the owner of the Chicago White Sox, Comiskey decided that he did not want to pay a pitcher by the name of Eddie Cicotti a bonus that Cicotti would have been owed if he won 30 games in the season. Needless to say, Eddie Cicotti was sitting on 29 wins, and Comiskey went down to the team owners and went down to the team manager and said, do not pitch Eddie Cicotti again. Cicotti finished on 29 and didn't collect the bonus. So from the position of the Yankees, it might be one that their incentive right now is just to stick A-Rod on the bench and not let him reach the next level. And for the Yankees to be willing to play A-Rod, where they may believe they have the right to not play him, they may be trying to convince Alex Rodriguez to just forego these bonuses if he wants to continue to play, and may even be trying to set up a case in future litigation. If Joe Girardi is told just keep Alex as the 25th man on the bench, and then Alex tries to attempt to sue for frustration of purpose in achieving those bonuses.
Mark Edelman is a law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, City University of New York. We're in conversation with him on the Jeff Blair Show. It doesn't sound like it's going to end well either way.
No, I mean, this is very odd in the sense that the Yankees are bringing Alex Rodriguez back. The simplest course of action here would simply be to make the point moot, to let Alex get some at-bats in spring training, and presuming he doesn't play overly well, let Chase Headley play third and let Garrett Jones DH, and minimize Alex Rodriguez's role and make it very difficult for him to achieve the bonuses by not giving him playing time. But I think the Yankees do know that Alex Rodriguez's advisors, which have already taken a scorched earth policy against the team, may also try to bring additional legal action if Alex is confined to the bench, especially for the perception of preventing him from hitting these targets.
Mark, could the Yankees argue at all that the home run record has, even though this deal was signed at a time when I think we all knew what was up with Barry Bonds, could they argue that this home run record has been so tainted and the subject of so much controversy that it's essentially not worth as much as it used to be? Could they argue that? Would that hold up in a court of law, or would a judge or whomever is looking at this just not pay attention to that because it's irrelevant to the fact that this is included in a contract?
The Yankees certainly could try to make that argument. As a matter of contract construction, however, a contract is determined in terms of its meaning based upon the clear language. Extrinsic evidence or parole evidence, which is evidence about information not related to the written contract itself, generally only can be brought in to interpretation of the contract if the contract is on its face ambiguous. So the Yankees would need to make some argument that the contract is ambiguous with respect to these bonuses, or in some other way the contract is void due to fraud on the part of Alex Rodriguez. While both of these arguments certainly could be made, I think the trouble still goes back to the Yankees in terms of the extension of the contract. The Yankees chose to include these bonuses in here. And the most recent contract for Alex Rodriguez came at a point in time where steroids were already very much up in the open as being an issue in Major League Baseball. And it would have been so easy or reasonable for the Yankees to have included into the contract language that would have had the effect of what they now want. But they can't go back just because they made a terrible deal with Alex Rodriguez several years back and attempt to try to rewrite the contract because they're embarrassed by it or do not like the deal that they agreed to. Moreover, in Major League Baseball, the collective bargaining agreement gives the power to the league overall to punish for performance-enhancing substances, stripping that power away from the team. Whether that's a good decision or not is a completely different situation, but the Yankees and the other Major League Baseball teams agreed to that with the players' union, and they can't strip away their agreement now merely because the Yankees look very bad.
I mean, you can see now, can't you, why more and more teams kind of go away from the milestone bonus aspect. I mean, there are teams who still give out bonuses for 200 innings pitched or something like that. There are teams like the Blue Jays, frankly, that generally don't go for bonus clauses. But you're always getting into dangerous territory when you agree to historical milestone bonuses, aren't you, in any sport?
You absolutely are. And the interesting thing here is they're rare in baseball in part because single-season statistical performances are generally disallowed by the Major League Baseball collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
When I say that, you're allowed to have a bonus nowadays for, say, 200 innings pitched or for winning the Cy Young. Based on the Eddie Cicotti example that I gave before, dating all the way back to 1919, you're no longer allowed to get bonuses for single-season credentials in terms, such as wins or home runs because of the perceived implication it would have on both managerial and player decisions.
Mark, it was great of you to join us this morning. It's going to be an interesting story. As I said, the Yankees and Alex Rodriguez really is a story that keeps on giving.
And I'm sure your fans up there are going to be much happier having Donaldson at third than those of us in New York would feel about Alex.
Yeah, I think that's pretty safe. Take care, Mark.
My pleasure.
It's Mark Edelman. He is a law professor at the Zicklin School of Business, City University of New York. He also writes extensively on sports law for Forbes. You can follow him on Twitter, at Mark Edelman. And please do. He's always got an interesting take on sports law. And if you're a fantasy sports fan, his particular area of expertise is the licensing, marketing, and legalization, if you want to call it that, of fantasy sports. And it's a fascinating field. And as I said, he's written about it extensively. And please give him a follow on Twitter, at Mark Edelman. Don't forget, 11:17, we will be going live to Hockey Central at noon, a special extended edition of Hockey Central at noon. We will be covering Martin Brodeur's retirement from St. Louis. You can hear that news conference on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You can watch it as well on Sportsnet. And to get you set for that, we are going to lead into it with a conversation with Corey Hirsch, Hockey Central analyst on Sportsnet. We're going to talk to him about Martin Brodeur's impact on Canadian hockey. You know, we've talked about the whole question of why he is retiring as a member of the St. Louis Blues compared to retiring as a member of the New Jersey Devils. Let's talk about Martin Brodeur, the goalie. What impact did he have in the game? I'm especially interested in comparing and contrasting Martin Brodeur's impact on the game, technically, to Patrick Waugh's impact on the game. Corey Hirsch of Hockey Central joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. He was never taught to keep his opinions to himself. That's why we love him. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, we're just 25 minutes away from joining a special extended edition of Hockey Central at noon. Martin Brodeur is retiring from the NHL. The news conference, it's still strange to sound strange to say this, the news conference will be held in St. Louis. He, of course, played 7 games with the Blues this year. We'll carry the news conference live on Sportsnet Ontario and on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Again, that in about 25 minutes, a news conference scheduled to start sometime. I'm sorry, Hockey Central scheduled to start sometime around 11:25. We talked to Renaud Lavoie about the whole notion of Martin Brodeur retiring as a member of the St. Louis Blues as opposed to retiring as a member of the New Jersey Devils. And I mean, I don't even know where to begin with that. Any hockey fan, you say the name Marty Brodeur, you think New Jersey Devils. You just do. It seems odd that 7 games is enough to retire as a member of that team. But as Renaud Lavoie told us, you know, Martin Brodeur appreciates the support he got from the Blues, the confidence they showed in him, and the fact that they essentially let him have closure by playing those 7 games. So I'm sure that will be a topic of conversation at Martin's news conference. I would guess it would be one of the first questions asked. But I'm interested more in talking right now about Marty Brodeur, the goalie, because it seems to me that Martin Brodeur and Patrick Waugh, that's kind of the lineage for me. Those are the guys that I sort of look at as kind of being the link, the consistency or the standard bearer for goaltending in the past couple of years, in the past two or three decades. Corey Hirsch is a Hockey Central analyst on Sportsnet. He is, of course, a former NHL goalie. Corey Hirsch joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Corey, thanks a lot for doing this. Give me a goaltender's point of view about why Martin Brodeur. I mean, the numbers are great. We know the numbers are great. He's at the top or near the top in a lot of numbers. But what is it about him as a goalie that was so revolutionary?
Well, with Marty, there was a lot of things. He was kind of one of the first guys to come in after Patrick Waugh from Quebec that played a little bit of the butterfly style, a little bit of the stand-up style. So he wasn't your traditional stand-up style goalie like most of us were back in the early 90s. And he really had a lot of the kids' generations coming up next to next trying to follow him. And there's just a lot of things that his competitiveness, like his competitive level is off the charts. And that's what makes these guys that are athletes of Michael Jordan's, the Wayne Gretzky's, their competitive levels are off the charts. They're not like a normal person's competitive levels. They'll do anything to win.
When you watched him play, with all due respect, respect the way I'm asking this question, but did you ever watch him play and go, God, I wish I could do that? You know?
Well, I have a story for that. I mean, I went to the World Junior Camp with him in the summer camp in 1991.
Right.
And I came out of the Western Hockey League, and I thought I was pretty good. I was like, gee, I'm the best goalie in the West. I'm coming to this camp, and I'm all this and that. And I looked in, I watched Marty Brodeur, and I was like, holy crap, that guy is at a completely different level than I was at. He was so good. I'd never seen anything like that, and how good he was, and how powerful he was, and just how competitive, and he was the best goalie I had seen at that age group at any point.
You use the word powerful. Describe that for me, because that's an interesting description for a goalie.
Well, when you talk about powerful, you talk about leg strength and just being able to get it to move and to get from side to side and just. You know, when you see a skater and they skate and you can just tell that they're quick and they're mm-hmm. strong and they're strong on their skates, that's kind of how Marty was. I mean, you couldn't knock him off his feet. You couldn't phase him. He was just a really powerful goalie.
What do you think it was about Marty beyond the performance, obviously, beyond the numbers, beyond the ability to win games, but that allowed him to to break the mold for goaltenders? Because, Corey, you know as well as anybody, a lot of times your first instinct, if you're a coach in any sport, if you see something different, is to go, yeah, I don't know if that's going to work. You may want to try this. Clearly, Marty just kind of marched to his own drummer. What was it about him that allowed him to do that? Because I've got to think other goalies, probably, I mean, maybe even yourself. I don't know. I've got to think other goalies kind of had their own style, and some of them may have had it coached out of them, and as a result, some of them may never have been able to really recover.
Yeah, and that's a really good question, but the biggest thing that comes off the top of my head is his ability to read the play was off the charts. It was like he knew what was going to happen before it even happened. And as goalies, we all like to think that we can anticipate and read the play.
Mm-hmm.
But the best players just have that extra sense, and it's hard to describe. The Wayne Gretzky's, I mean, he knew where everybody was on the ice, and the Scott Niedermeyer's, and they just had the ability that a lot of people didn't have to be able to see what was going to happen, to be able to anticipate what was going to happen, and almost be a step ahead of the game. Mm. And it's just an amazing thing that these guys have, the Michael Jordans. I put him in the category of one of the best athletes that ever played a professional sport.
Corey Hirsch in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. How much did the New Jersey Devils system help him? Or maybe I'll rephrase that. How much of what the New Jersey Devils did systemically was a result of having that particular guy in goal?
That is a little bit of everything. It helped Marty, no question. But you still have to stop the puck. And once you get into the level of Stanley Cup finals, like against the Rangers, I was there in 94 when he played against the Rangers, and the trap didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that Rangers team was a good team, and Marty was good. So you still have to have the ability to stop the puck at the end of the day. But Marty, I mean, the way he played the puck was another thing that was Ron Hextall revolutionized it for goaltending, but Marty took it to another level where they had to change the game because of him. He had things and he could do things that other guys just couldn't do. And in New Jersey, I think they built a system around him. And Lou never got another goalie that would ever push Marty. If you ever noticed, none of his backups were ever good enough to push Marty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mentally that helped Marty too as well.
Last night in Hockey Central in the Wisers to the Point segment, Doug McLean and Darren Pang were asked what I thought was a very unfair question. So, of course, I'm going to ask it of you.
Let's hear it.
Patrick Waugh or Martin Brodeur, one game, who do you pick?
Oh, geez, that's a tough one. That is an unfair question.
I thought, you know, when they were talking about it, I thought about that. And, I mean, I'm usually, when I watch those things, I usually have no problem coming up with an answer right away, and then I sort of have to try to argue myself out of it. I couldn't come up with it because I saw both of them play a lot, and honest to God, I couldn't come up with an answer. My first instinct, actually, was Patrick, to be honest.
Patrick had that competitive fire that was, I mean, he would do anything to win, where in a one-game situation, he could really come out and steal the show for you. But on a consistency level, Marty was a much more consistent goalie. I mean, this is a guy that played well night after night after night after night. Patrick would have the odd bad game in there, but he would go and stand on his head, and then he would steal you a game two nights later. So That's kind of the difference between them. But that is a tough question. I would probably go with Marty right now just because of all of his shutouts and hope that he gets me another shutout.
Corey Hirsch in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. We are just a few minutes away from Martin Brodeur's retirement news conference in St. Louis. Corey, as a hockey guy, how difficult is it going to be to think of Marty Brodeur retiring as a member of the St. Louis Blues?
Well, this is the question that came up. Why does Marty retire as the St. Louis Blue? And here's the reason why, and I believe that this is the reason why. Marty wants to win.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming that he went back to Jersey. He probably called Lou and said, look, you know, this is what I want to be a member of the New Jersey Devils. I'll always be a member of the New Jersey Devils. What should I do? And if I know Lou, Lou's like, well, St. Louis has a chance to win a cup. We don't have a chance here. So, you know, why wouldn't you go there, become a member of the front office and try and get yourself another ring? And that's Marty's wants to win. And Marty would probably, that's the main reason why he's doing that. He'll be retired as a New Jersey Devil. We'll always think of him as that. It's only on paper that he's a member of the St. Louis Blues. But St. Louis has a legitimate chance to win. So St. Louis probably offered him to the point where, look, we'll pay the rest of your salary. We want you to come in as a consultant. How do you feel about that? I'm sure there was a lot of dialogue back and forth between St. Louis and New Jersey. And if I know Lou and I know Marty, it's about winning, and it's about an opportunity to win another cup, and that's why Marty's retiring as St. Louis Blue.
Corey, great insight. I appreciate you joining us today.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Take care. That's Corey Hirsch, Hockey Central analyst on Sportsnet. Some interesting insight in Marty Brodeur, the goalie. I thought that was fascinating last night on Hockey Central, a question. I love that segment, by the way. Why is it to the point? But I thought it was fascinating. It's like you could see McLean and Pang going, how do you choose between Patrick Waugh and Martin Brodeur? One game to win. Who do you want in goal? You know, I was thinking about this, and I expand it. I mean, I remember when Ken Dryden was a great goalie. I mean, people are going to be, you know, going back to all the great goalies. Say one game, who did you want in goal to win the game? And we appreciate Corey Hirsch joining us. So let's refresh what's going to happen. First of all, we'll let you know the Leafs are playing the Arizona Coyotes tonight and at the Air Canada Center. We will have our Leafs Nation post game immediately following the game with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne. And they'll either talk you off the ledge or, well, hell, it's, I don't know, why would you be in the ledge now? It's the Arizona Coyotes, two bad hockey teams. One very open about the fact that it's rebuilding, the other sort of hinting that it's rebuilding. If you lose your you-know-what over a game against the Arizona Coyotes, I don't know what hope there is for you. But anyhow, Leafs Nation postgame will be on immediately following the game. If you want to watch some non-Leafs hockey tonight, and, well, who wouldn't? Sportsnet Ontario's got the Bruins and the New York Islanders on Thursday night hockey at 7 o'clock. The Islanders, just an outrageously good team this year. And so much fun to watch. That game will be on Thursday night hockey at 7 o'clock, followed by the Ducks and Sharks at 10. Both of those games on Sportsnet 360. And in a couple of moments, we are going to take you to St. Louis. We will have a special extended edition of Hockey Central at noon starting around 11:25. We'll get you set for Martin Brodeur's retirement news conference at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. And I'm sure, as we talked about in this show with Ren Lavoie and Corey Hirsch, and as I mentioned in my commentary, the notion of Martin Brodeur retiring as a member of the St. Louis Blues, there's seven games with the St. Louis Blues, just seems so odd to those of us who've grown up, or to those of us who've watched Marty for what, these 20 years as a member of the New Jersey Devils. I'm frankly never going to associate Martin Brodeur and the St. Louis Blues. But as I've said a couple of times, all great athletes, and Martin Brodeur is a great athlete and a great performer, the numbers back that up, all great athletes deserve the right to retire on their own schedule. All great athletes should be allowed to go out without being pushed out, without having economics be a factor, without having injury be a factor. Martin Brodeur clearly thought that he needed to do this to get closure. And really, who are the rest of us to argue about that? It may not fit into what we think would have been the perfect way for Martin Brodeur to wrap up his career. But clearly, Martin Brodeur was comfortable doing this. And we wish him a lot of success in his future endeavors. He's been a great servant for the game. He's been really, really good with the media for a long, long time. So that's it for the Blair Show today. We'll be back tomorrow with our regular full edition. Hockey Central at noon, a special extended edition at 11:25. Martin Brodeur is calling it quits from St. Louis. Enjoy the news conference. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.